with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The light's on, the stream is live, and the mic is hot, and it is Tuesday on the Horn, the second day of March. Apparently, here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, west by God, almost level West Virginia, March is entering like a lion, because we got more snow. Oh, joy. More snow. Yay. Hurrah. But you know what? We've got great potential for conversation this evening, and that's what matters most. So, screw the snow. Might as well try to shovel back the tides as try to keep the snow back. Although I was thinking about something the other day, and just ponder this for a moment, if you will. You know, even things such as hours paid for snowplow work and salt for salt trucks to scatter on the roads to melt ice and snow, that's all got to be budgeted, right? Sure it does. Now, here's the question. The governor of West Virginia, Joe Manchin, is a notorious global warming denier, even though he passes himself off as a Democrat. Remember, when you're considering West Virginia politics, the only Democrat a Manchin has ever voted for has been another Manchin. The Manchin family helped us get Arch Moore, the Republican governor who just about robbed us blind and wound up in the federal penitentiary. The Manchin family formed Democrats for Moore. More recently, when a brilliant woman named Charlotte Pritt was running for governor in 1996, the Manchin family formed Democrats for Underwood so that they could get a barely still breathing Republican corpse in the governor's mansion instead of her, because she had whipped Joe in the primaries and he didn't like it very well. And Joe, of course, is in the pocket of big coal. Never met a coal polluter, producer, the scalawag, whatever, that he didn't think was especially entitled to some form of corporate welfare. Big touter of things like the carbon capture and sequestration and so forth. But in the face of all of that, he's still got to have a budget. And in many states where snow has been very prevalent this year, other governors similarly situated also have to have a budget. And so here's the question. If you're a global warming denier, and in Joe Manchin's particular case, if you're someone who denies that coal and its extraction is harming Appalachia and particularly West Virginia, how do you go about setting up a budget that takes into account apparently a shifting and radically changing climate paradigm that has closed schools in the state for weeks on end and has overtaxed our supplies of money and supplies with, materials with which to deal with things like heavy snowfall and ice storms? How do you budget for that when the very cause of it is something that you don't think exists? Do you see what kind of turbulent conflicts arise inside the minds of the deniers and the coalistas and the you know, that crowd. That would, if that was me, that'd give me a headache.
Well, I think it looks like we need to build in some extra money in the budget for snow plowing and salt scattering and so forth. But that would mean admitting that the climate's changing, and, well, the climate's not changing. Because remember, there's no climate change because it snowed in the dead of winter, right? So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out among deniers and the like from coal states, like Kentucky, like Virginia, like West Virginia. That'll be very interesting indeed. But that really wasn't where I was going to get started this evening. No, no, my jumping-off place this evening... My jumping-off place this evening is a story that broke yesterday while the show was in progress, and I didn't want to just hit it on the fly because it seemed to deserve its own it seemed to deserve its own space. Now, you may or may not know that President Obama has had his annual presidential physical. And you know how it is that it's become almost a dogmatically doctrinaire religious event, akin to the guy with the top hat pulling Punxsutawney Phil out of the box on every February 2nd in Pennsylvania. And then they read a proclamation as to the president's health. The president, of course, is, as would be fitting, I suppose, inspected, neglected, rejected, and detected, to use Arlo Guthrie's words, so that we can know every last little thing that is going on inside his corporeal existence. And we've seen it over the years. You know, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan. You know, although the one with Ronald Reagan was always fun because the doctors always participated in that delightful little fraud that suggested that Reagan had a functioning brain when it was all just cobwebs. Oh, yeah. But the presidential physical came out. And in light of the fact that the president of the United States, this present one, is an extremely healthy specimen of middle-aged male, then it's kind of hard to, figure that he'd have a lot of problems. So I looked at this thing that happened last night because the presidential health report came out, and there was immediately a posting at the Drudge Report. Yeah, this is too precious by half. Because President Obama got the standard lecture. You and I go to the doctor for a physical and we get the lecture. You know, hey, bring down the cholesterol. You got to bring down the cholesterol. If you're smoking, quit smoking. If you don't smoke, don't start. Don't get loaded every night. Drink in moderation. Make sure you go to your dentist. Don't forget to floss. Nothing particularly fancy, unless you are Matt Drudge, unless you are a right-wing POS like Matt Drudge. Now, this is what the actual presidential physical fitness report said. Follow-up colorectal cancer screening and recommended in 5 years for routine colon cancer screening. Continue smoking cessation efforts, a daily exercise program, healthy diet, moderation in alcohol intake, periodic dental care, and remain up to date with recommended immunizations. Continue modified exercise regimen and lower extremity muscle strengthening program for occasional left patella femoral pain secondary to chronic tendonitis. Yeah, bum knee. Recommend dietary modification to reduce LDL cholesterol below 130. No big deal, right?
unless you're Matt Drudge. And you know how it is with wingers. They live and they die by the scandal sheet reportage of that guy who wears a hat that looks like something out of Caddyshack. You know, the scene where Al Chervik, you know, says, "Oh, look at this hat. You buy this hat, does it come with a bowl of soup? Oh, but it looks good on you, Judge." Yeah, that one. The guy that wears a hat, Matt Drudge, who put on his page, "Jeez, these dishonest, mendacious sons of bitches," self-made, a story about the president's physical exam, illustrating the headline was a photograph of Barack Obama attending a basketball game and drinking a beer while he was doing it. Yeah, a beer. What was Matt Drudge's headline? "Paper. Obama doctors recommend moderation of alcohol intake." Yeah. Yeah, that's right, because, well, you know how it is when one of those people, you know, get into the drink and that, yeah. Yeah, that Magnum malt liquor will make you mean. Took 1, 2, 3, 4 words out of a lengthy physical report, and in one fell swoop, turned Barack Obama into a sodden lush. "Paper, Obama doctors recommend moderation of alcohol intake." So I got a little curious, and Sue got a little curious, and she did some research a-latin, and found something that you might find interesting as well. Because what she did is she went and looked up George Bush's exam. Now, this goes back to August the 2nd, 2006. New York Times. "The White House released the following report on President Bush's annual physical examination. President George W. Bush." Well, they established that. "Summary of medical history, August 1st, 2006, with the date of birth July 6th, 1946, the president is 60 years old." Man, you can't beat the patent. Wow. That's some serious, serious medical care. "Past and interim medical history. There is no past medical history of hypertension, diabetes, tuberculosis, sexually transmitted disease," no, that's his brother, "or stroke. The president benefits from a low to very low favorable coronary artery disease risk profile." That's because the evil never die young. "With a favorable family medical history, absence of modifiable risk factors, superior fitness." Yes, superior. But remember when he used to have his little bicycle wrecks? Remember when he wrecked the Segway? Yeah. "Favorable CAD markers, e.g. CRP, lipids, and functional studies, stress echocardiogram, and minimal mild coronary artery calcification noted on anatomic study, coronary artery computed tomography, 2004. Seborrheic keratosis, actinic keratoses identified and treated with liquid nitrogen. Oh, wow. Telangiectasias nasal bridge consistent with solar damage, treated 803. That means, I guess, he had some sort of rot on his nose. Vasovagal syncope, solitary episode with identifiable precipitating event superimposed on longstanding non-pathologic sinus bradycardia, consistent with a conditioned heart, evaluation January 02, no sequelae and no recurrence. That's when he lost the battle of the pretzel. Now, why am I going through this? Well, there's a bunch of stuff in here. He's got GERD, gastroesophageal reflux with well-defined triggers. He has vitreous floaters. Those are those little specks that you see in your vision that don't go away.
bad eyesight. He takes a daily multivitamin. It's a Flintstones, boys and girls. He was current for all his immunizations for worldwide travel. Uh-oh, social history, tobacco, an occasional cigar.
Really?
Where was the Drudge headline, Doctor to Bush? Lay off the smoking. Oh, he was a caffeine user, diet sodas and coffee. Other, the president has not missed work due to illness since his last physical exam. Not if you don't count all those vacations as missing work, but, you know, who the hell am I? But here's the kicker. Alcohol. None. Yeah. That's word of mouth. Summary, the president remains in the superior fitness category for men his age. And in the summary, they don't even mention the presence of the cigar smoking. Not even. Too precious to calculate. Now, as Sue noted, it does say he smokes cigars, so since the right-wingers get on Obama's ass about it, that must mean that Bush was smoking inside the White House. Because the wingnuts are always, he's got to be smoking inside the White House. And Sue inquires, how come we got to keep paying to have his skin lesions removed simply because he's too damn stupid to put on sunscreen when he goes outside and bakes his ass? Not so sure. So, never mind the fact that there's no indication that Barack Obama has any sort of alcohol problem. Not even the slightest intimation. I mean, there's no history of him getting drunk and driving a car through the picture window of his home, screaming at his wife. There's no history of him getting loaded out of his mind and hollering, "Come on, Jeremiah Wright! We'll do this mano a mano." You know, like W did with George H.W. Bush, his daddy. There's no evidence of Barack Obama having a couple of DUI incidents like there was with George W. Bush. But you know what? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. God, this is crazy making. Because Matt Drudge can simply hang something out there and it will be swallowed whole. Now, the entire doctor's report is a different animal entirely. It's the same sort of thing that I just quoted to you. But again, it doesn't matter. Because the inherent racism present inside the Republican Party and inside so-called conservative circles merely wants to make sure that it gets out there that that Barack Obama, he's a drinking man. Well, he couldn't very well deny it. Not only was there the having a beer at the basketball game incident, there was the White House lawn beer summit. Marvelline, we only said we wanted to have a beer with George W. Bush. We knew he was a fine Christian man for whom lips that touched liquor would never touch his. What do you mean, Emery? His lips? No, his liquor. Look at the double standard. And look at the number of people who read Matt Drudge or do what passes among conservatives for reading. Remember, after all, that story that came out toward the end of last week that, your conservatives, they're not so smart. Not as smart as a liberal. That was a fascinating story, and Mike Malloy covered it very, very well on Friday night's program. And, of course, he went over it in great detail. It has to do with a study that came out from the London School of Economics and Political Science that correlated data on behaviors with IQ from a large national U.S. sample. They found that, on average, people who identified as liberal and atheist had higher IQs. It also applied to sexual exclusivity in men, but not in women. It'll all come out in the March 2010 issue of Social Psychology Quarterly. It's about a 6 to 11 point difference between liberals and conservatives. And you know what? That 6 to 11 points can mean plenty. It's the difference between being able to tell when you are being manipulated and not being able to tell when you are being manipulated. It's the difference between being able to be bamboozled by a claim that, you know, he was born in Kenya, to realizing that Orly Tates is a sham artist and a moron. Really, it's sort of one of those, for want of a nail, a shoe was lost kind of things. The study came from data gathered in the National Longitudinal Study of Adolescent Health, which began with adolescents in grades 7 to 12 in the United States during the 1994-95 school year. Participants were interviewed as 18 to 28-year-olds from 2001 to 2002, and the study also looked at the General Social Survey, another cross-national data collection source. And simply found that liberals, you, me, are smarter. We just are. I guess that's why Rush Limbaugh is a $40 million a year industry of one. Beck climbing that millionaire ladder. Hannity climbing that millionaire ladder. Because there are so many morons out there who are willing to be fed falsehoods and are too damn stupid to know the difference. But you want to know the real punchline to this story? The reason that there is nothing to celebrate in the story of, woohoo, we're smarter, yay! Well, don't get the party hats and the little noisemakers out yet. Because the one thing that is clear is that there is no evidence whatsoever that the human species at large is evolving toward a future where intelligence are the default trait. Higher intelligence, we're not getting smarter. You know why? This is a quote from the researcher, Satoshi Kanasawa. More intelligent people don't have more children, so moving away from the trajectory is not going to happen. That's right. A study is going to be published in the Journal of Social Psychology that is actually going to confirm data that comes from a relatively low-budget Hollywood film that was put out by Fox. More intelligent people don't have more children, so moving away from the trajectory is not going to happen, Kanazawa said. In short, you know, the opening sequences of Idiocracy, where the smart people are sitting there not breeding and, in fact, going backwards, and the morons are, all those little bubbles are popping up. Hey, look, I'm going to all of y'all tonight. It wasn't comedy. That was social psychology painted as film. Because not only do they walk among us, they're breeders. Hard breeders. Aren't those freaks in Arkansas, what's their name, Duggar or something like that? Aren't they on the TV box now with their 19 children and another on the way? These religious fools who are having more babies for the glory of Jeebus? You know, this woman who treats her womb like a clown car? Yeah, they are. they have replicated their own stupidity 14, 15, 16 times over. You know, if you've got kids, you know, you have kid one, and so theoretically at least, parent one has been replaced in the next generation. You have kid two, parent two has been replaced in the next generation. And if you have kid three, then you've created a net gain for that little gene pool. Well, look at the fundamentalists with their 14 and 15 children. They've made it 5-6 times more likely that their genetics will be passed on to another generation, that there will be another generation of stupid to shout down and scream at whatever attempt you made toward passing some degree of intelligence into the next generation. Yeah, that's how that works. It is going to be head for the hills. Well, you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Yeah, the prescription drug abuse, a national tragedy, as our critic at large Reverbo notes. Those circus animal tranquilizers, George Jr. used to forge scripts for those all the time. Yeah, I think there was probably a recommendation in there that the White House didn't release, that his little morphine pump not be featured so prominently in the small of his upper back between his shoulder blades. Remember that little square box? That wasn't a transmitter. That was a morphine pump or a Xanax pump. Something like that. Our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, OSBORNEINK.com, reminding me, Bob, I'll remind you, see, I told you he was reminding me, Bob, I'll remind you that in the days after the beer summit, I noted this meme emerging in the Florence, Alabama newspaper's call-in comment line. I keep saying that Media Matters needs to install an early warning system down here. This meme comes straight out of the prohibitionist tendencies of Southern Baptist and Church of Christ culture that keep half of Alabama's counties dry. Hell yeah! David in Tennessee noting, I sense the same sort of jaundiced position from that hospital health report for President Obama, as was his lot when the Secretary of the Secret Service, when the Secret Service dubbed him renegade. I see a purpose to it from the outset. Yeah, you remember when he was nicknamed renegade. I was the only guy in the country who happened to notice that inside the lyric to that Styx song, which would have been forever stuck on a loop inside anybody who was in the name assigning business of the Secret Service, because, you know, you got to get up into middle management, you know, up around, maybe a little bit younger than me, but up around there, and you would be familiar with Styx singing Renegade. I was the only person in the country who happened to notice that there was a racist, or arguably racist, element within that lyric. You know, it's not about playing this stuff backwards. It's about being culturally aware. That's how we can start this program on a Tuesday evening, the second day of March, how we can start this program with a notation from the Drudge Report that implies that, you know, that one is hitting the sauce a little too hard when the previous occupant was a damn dry drunk. That's how we can start with that and find ourselves discussing the fact that, yeah, to stand aside, here comes the Morans. Could be an interesting evening. It's going to be an interesting evening. By the way, let me share some words with you. You know, we do that a lot here on this radio program. We share words. This is a quote from a news story. It's actually a quote from a news story that was written for the journalism business by folks in Senator Jim Bunning's office. You'll be glad to hear what Senator Bunning has to say. U.S. Senator Jim Bunning today announced that legislation to extend temporary unemployment benefits for an additional 5 months has passed the United States Congress. The legislation, which was unanimously approved yesterday by the Senate by a vote of 416-4, it today in the House,
would also provide a temporary 13-week extension of unemployment benefits for all individuals who exhaust their traditional benefits. Quote, the Congress is off to a solid start. This is hopeful news for our most needy families in Kentucky. By approving this legislation, we will help those folks who are currently without work continue to make ends meet until they can find new employment. Passage of this legislation means there will be no lapse in assistance for nearly 10,000 Kentuckians who have filed claims so far for extended benefits. There's only one problem. That comes from 2003. That comes when a respectable white man, God-fearing white man you'd like to have a beer with sometime, was in the White House. Yes, yes, well, you might say, but see, we could afford it back then because we actually had the money to pay for the extensions, and Senator Bunning is objecting to the fact that we're doing this on credit when into... No. No. In 2003, it was done on the government credit card, too. Back then, the Congressional Budget Office estimated that the budgetary cost of the unemployment benefit increase was $6.6 billion between 2003 and 2007. Now, because of the screw job that he has given them, 4,300 Kentuckians are going to lose their unemployment benefits during the week of March the 13th without an extension. Bless their hearts, the folks over at thinkprogress.org asked the question, if Bunning's stance today is truly principled, then why didn't he stand up to fight the unpaid-for benefits in 2003 under the Republican President Bush? Do we really have to ask that question? Do we really? I think we know the answer, don't we? It's the same reason that Matt Drudge can put a scurrilous headline alleging that the President of the United States, who has no history of alcohol abuse whatsoever, needs to be warned to drink only in moderation, and implying, of course, that he's a drunk. It's not the difference between Democrats and Republicans. If that was the case, it might be easier. But this is sicker. This is more insidious. The simple case is that Jim Bunning can do what Jim Bunning is doing and get away with it with folks like Jim DeMented of South Carolina and Bob Corker of Tennessee openly supporting him. He can do this because, you know, Barack Obama is, well, black. What other excuse is there? You know, it's there in the sort of thinly veiled anti-Semitism, the race baiting talk of Glenn Beck. It's there far more out in the open with Rush Limbaugh. And it is so very much there in the form of Jim Bunning. Welcome to 2010. You know? I don't like saying these things. You don't like hearing them. You don't like thinking them. But because we are reality-based, We find ourselves thinking these things because these are the things that reality leads us to. It's kind of
inescapable. Isn't it? Sure feels that way. So that's how the program gets started. That's where we are. You know how to get involved, of course. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. On your own nickel, it's 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind. And sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes me feel mellow.
Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much. Vodka puts my mouth in gear. This little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact, I like beer.
You like beer.
My wife often frowns when we're out on the town, and I'm wearing a suit and a tie. She's sipping vermouth, and she thinks I'm uncouth. Why yell as the waiter goes by? I like beer.
It makes me a jolly good fellow.
I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much. Vodka puts my mouth in gear. While this little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact, I like beer. Last night I dreamed that I passed from the scene, and I went to a place so sublime. All the water was clear and tasted like beer. Then they turned it all into wine. I like beer.
It makes me a jolly good fellow.
I like beer. It helps me unwind. Sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much. Vodka puts my mouth in gear. All this little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact, I love beer.
Yes, he loves beer.
Just don't let anybody at the Drudge Report find out, or there'll be a headline. Tom T. Hall. I like beer. I love that song. But, you know, that should be the national anthem of the Flying Spaghetti Monster Heaven, where, you know, when you die, it's where you go, and there's a stripper factory and a beer volcano. What a heaven that'll be. Too bad it's no more real than any of the others. Oh, well, imagine the hypocrisy of having a dry drunk for 8 years that you said nothing about, but having a hissy about, look at him, he's holding a beer there. I've seen him in the company of beer several times. You know, the fact of the matter is, I'd rather have a president having a couple of beers as opposed to an older fella with, you know, pudding for brains, asking some well-dressed stick-figure wife to read him the horoscope that day. Oh, Ronnie, this is not a good day to make peace with the Russians. Well, okay, the missiles begin flying in 5 minutes. Mommy? the bunting stuff has ramifications far beyond unemployment compensation, way far beyond. I don't know if you caught this or not, but there's a moratorium on Medicare payments, and that was not caused by Obamacare or socialism or anything along those lines, anything of the sort. No, hell no. According to the Associated Press, political gridlock in the Senate has triggered a 21% cut in Medicare fees to doctors. Funding to temporarily stave off the cuts was part of a bill passed by the House last week to extend unemployment benefits and other government programs, but that, too, is out in the cold, thanks to Jim Bunning. Gee, where's Caribou Barbie? Where's Godzilla from Wasilla? Where's Mussolini out there talking about Senator Jim Bunning and his death panel of one? Come on, where's Sean Hannity talking about rationing? Because Senator Jim Bunning just rationed Medicare to the tune of 21%. Where's the Drudge headline? Yeah, you and I both know where it is. Well, jump in on the phones if you want to. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Pretty good, Susan. How about you?
Well, I'm a lot better than I was. Two pieces of news.
Yes?
Biden and Casey and one other have signed a letter asking for the public option in reconciliation, thereby bringing the total up. We are approaching critical mass. The closer we get to critical mass, the faster the Republicans are liable to fold on their filibuster. because they really, really don't want a public option, and we all know it. I'm not silly enough to think that we're ever going to get a public option. But as a bargaining chip, it's beautiful.
Well, I'd like it as an actuality, but, you know, and
well,
so would
so
you.
I'll use it as I can, however I can get it. The other piece of news, the guy that is challenging Blanche Lincoln in her primary.
Yes, in Arkansas. Good guy.
Yeah. In 2 days, he's picked up $3 million.
You know, that has got to just be making poor Blanche sweat a little bit.
That's got to be making the White House sweat, because they're backing Blanche.
They kind of have to, though, don't they?
Personally, I'd cut her loose.
I would, too, but remember who the chief of staff is, Susan.
Yes, well, the chief of staff had better learn to cut when to cut his losses.
You know, but you know, Blanche is as blue dog as they can. I mean, she is Walmart blue.
Yeah, I know. She's the senator from Walmart. She's a Dino. This guy is a progressive. Let's go with the progressives.
But there's a sort of a wider trend taking place here, and that is that people have jumped in the last 2 days with the announcement of what's his name, Bill Halter, of his campaign. But there's also a positive trend here that just made me, you know, do one of those when I saw it coming out of the New York Times today. Where'd it go? Yeah, from the New York Times is The Caucus, the politics and government blog of the Times.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting headline, Susan. Labor jumps into Arkansas Senate race.
Yeah, I know. They tossed in part of that $3 million.
Yeah. A big part of it.
Yeah.
And this is important because usually they stay out of primary fights, but even organized, it even got to the point with organized labor where organized labor said, no, sister, you got to go. And so the AFL-CIO announced today that it's so sick of Blanche Lincoln that it's formally endorsed Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter
Gerald McEntee, chairman of the AFL-CIO's political committee and president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, said the days of automatic endorsements of incumbents are over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he also announced, Mr. McEntee did, Gerald McEntee said, four unions, his own, namely the AFSCME, as well as the Communications Workers of America, the steel workers, and the service employees, they've all pledged $1 million.
Yep. And that's what Rahm should be paying attention to, because, you see, Obama is now an incumbent.
Yeah.
And he can't get reelected without the unions, and he should pay attention to that. Do not piss off the unions.
Well, I hope that maybe Rahm is reading that and taking it very seriously. But I'm really, really proud of organized labor for standing up this way.
So am I.
Because they allowed, for the longest time, they allowed these incumbents, these creeps, to simply assume that not because of the D behind their name, but because of the I, you know, incumbent, that they were a lock for the cash. And you know what else is out there in terms of this $1 million pledge? And this is important. This is a little shot across the bow that labor is going to take seriously the Citizens United decision as well. Because they just, okay, we're writing $1 million check, screw it. Now, the question is, will Walmart write a check for four?
Well, they probably can. Well, we know they can. Yep. Walmart could write several checks for $4 million and not even feel it.
And all of this is a part of a strategy that has been developed over time by the new, relatively new AFL-CIO president, Richard Trumka.
Yep.
MoveOn.org has had a huge press in the last couple of days for $5 here and $5 there to support Bill Halter.
Now, all those Obama people that pay that coughed up $5, $10, $15 over the campaign, MoveOn said, "Hey guys, here's another good one you should support," and they did.
Well, this is exactly the strategy that needs to be followed, and it's something you know that I've talked about on a number of occasions. You don't wait till November. You challenge in the primaries. You make them sweat in the primaries. Now, I don't know what kind of strychnine-drinking, floor-rolling, snake-handling, tongue-speaking freak the right-wingers have planned to run on the Republican side of the ticket, but you can bet that that person is exactly that.
Well,
but Halter's proven his ability to win statewide office, so cross your fingers.
Yeah, I've been reading some of the statements coming, not political, you know, not the statements from the operatives. I'm talking about ordinary people, the postings and stuff in comment sections from Arkansas. And they like Halter.
Yeah.
Even the conservatives like him.
Now, here's a question for you.
Which is really nice.
And this one just beats the stuffing out of me, Susan. If labor can figure it out in Arkansas, why can't they figure it out in Pennsylvania?
Good question.
If labor has the nerve to jump out there and get on the bandwagon behind Bill Halter in opposing Blanche Lincoln in the primary, why in God's name aren't they solidly behind a guy who will be a much better friend to them than single brain cell theory Arlen Specter would ever be?
Yeah, I agree with you there.
And I mean, I don't ask this rhetorically. It's something for us all to think about. What's the difference? Because Arlen Specter is actually to the right of Blanche Lincoln.
Yeah.
Blanche Lincoln occasionally gets a vote right. Arlen Specter, as a Republican, was specifically why the Employee Free Choice Act couldn't go forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I I don't understand it in Pennsylvania. Personally, I think they should have gone for Joe Sestak. I really do. I think Move On ought to be, for all I know, Move On is behind Joe Sestak. But I just don't understand it.
I don't either. It's sort of that semi-cohesive political theory that seems to operate in Democratic circles. On the one hand, you get a great decision in Arkansas, but then you have to look back over your shoulder at Pennsylvania and realize that for all intents and purposes, organized labor is behind a wax dummy from Madame Tussauds wax museum in that race.
Yeah. On another note, would you care for a chortle?
Oh, I'm always up for a giggle.
Okay. I don't know if you listen to Steffi.
No, I never do.
Okay. It's Stephanie Miller. Yesterday, somebody emailed her and said that he and his wife went to this trivia contest thing at a bar, and one of the questions was how many heart attacks has Dick Cheney had, and the guy's wife promptly yelled out too many and brought down the entire house.
Well, and see, that's the question, is it too many or not enough?
Oh yeah, that's right, I did it wrong. She said not enough.
Oh, okay, then, yeah.
Yeah, not enough. She brought down the entire house. And, yeah, sure, it's kind of icky to say something like that about somebody, but by the same token, I laugh myself silly.
No, because Dick Cheney's evil, and you can say things like that about an evil person.
Well, I don't even think he's human.
I mean, consider, I don't know if you know this, but former Dim leader, went to be honored, I guess yesterday or today, in Texas, where Rick Perry got up on the stump, you know, Rick Goodhair Perry, and praised him. It was yesterday, yeah. Praised him effusively. Rick Perry getting up at this meeting of the friends. Yeah.
Ed Schultz just barked into his own show. He says the standoff with Bunning is over.
Any details?
Well, then they probably cut to a commercial, of course.
Yeah. Well, I wonder why. I wonder how. I wonder who finally had the lights go on for them. You know that, among other things, Senator John Cornhole, I mean Cornyn of Texas, was backing Bunning. Well, the fact of the matter is, it turns out that the Bunning's little stunt meant that 27,400 Texans would lose jobless benefits this week. 27,400. And Cornyn is sitting there saying, oh, this is a good idea?
Yeah, I'm checking with Huffington Post, and they're not showing anything. The Democrats are saying they may force an all-night session.
Well, that doesn't sound like it's over, then.
Well, yeah, but this was as of 6:03 Eastern. So that was quite a few minutes ago.
Okay, I'm looking at a link here in the headonradionetwork.com chat room coming from our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, over at the Huffington Post. Bunning blocks jobless benefits again, deal reportedly near. 6:03 p.m., Bunning places blanket hold on Obama nominees. Democrats may force all-night session.
Harry Reid's office says that in addition to placing a notorious hold on unemployment benefits, Bunning has now placed a blanket hold on all executive branch appointments.
Yeah, that's the same thing that I've got coming to post, the same time stamp. So that was almost an hour ago.
But here's the funny thing, Susan. It's at the bottom of the story. Senate GOP leader says deal will be reached, won't take position on Bunning's block. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said at a press conference Tuesday that he would soon have an agreement with Senator Bunning to allow a vote on a bill, yada, yada, yada. So, in other words, Harry Reid has been absolutely flaccid. And Senator McConnell is the one who's doing the deal-making. Need we know any more about Harry Reid? Anything at all?
Out for years. Harry needs to go. I was never so thrilled as when I found out that Harry is in deep, deep trouble with his own state and will probably not get reelected. Yay!
Well, this will be interesting to watch develop. It most assuredly will.
I am just so sick of dear old Harry.
Ain't we all? Susan, have yourself a good evening, and thanks for the update.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Susan.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Uh-huh. Bye. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon, and we will take a little break. You can light up the phone lines if you would like. You are more than welcome to do so. You know the email address, of course. Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid @gmail.com.
I'll tell you a story.
This is The Horn, America's listener-supported liberal voice.
I come home one Friday, had to tell the landlady that I lost my job. She said, that don't confront me, as long as I get my money next Friday. Now next Friday I come, I didn't get the rent, and out the door I went. So I goes to the landlady. I said, you let me slide. I have the rent for it tomorrow, the next day I don't know. So she said, let me slide it on, you know, people. I notice when I come home in the evening, she ain't got nothing nice to say to me. But for 5 years, she was so nice. Know what she would love a dozen. I come home one particular evening. The landlady said, you got the rent money yet? I said, no. Can't find no job. Therefore, I ain't got no money to pay the rent. She said, I don't believe you're trying to find no job. Said, I seen you today, you were standing on a corner, leaning up against a post. I said, but I'm tired. I've been walking all day. She said, that don't confront me, long as I get my money next Friday. Now next Friday I come, I didn't have a rent, and out the door I went. So I go down the street, down to my good friend's house. I said, look, man, I'm outdoors, you know. Can I stay with you maybe a couple days? He said, oh, let me go and ask my wife. To come out of the house, I'd have seen his face. I know there was no. He said, I don't know, man. She kind of funny, you know. I said, I know. Everybody funny. Now you funny too. So I go back home. I tell the landlady, I got a job. I'm gonna pay the rent. She said, yeah. I said, oh yeah. And then she was so nice. Lord, she would never do it. So I go in my room, pack up my things, and I go.
I'm slipping out the back door. Down the streets I go. She hollering about the front rent. She'll be lucky to get in the back rent. She ain't gonna get none of it. So I stop in the local bar, you know, people. I go to the bar. I rent my coat. I call the bartender. I said, look, man, come down here. You got down there. So what you want? One bourbon, one scotch, one beer. Well, I ain't seen my baby since I don't know when. I've been drinking bourbon, whiskey, scotch and gin. Gonna get high, man, I'm gonna get loose. Need me a triple shot of that juice. Gonna get drunk, don't you have no fear. I want one bourbon, one scotch, one beer. One bourbon, one scotch, one beer. But I'm sitting there at the bar. I'm getting drunk. I'm feeling mellow. I'm drinking bourbon. I'm drinking scotch. I'm drinking beer. Look at the bar. Look at the bartender. Look mad. Come down here. So what you want? One bourbon, one scotch, one beer. No, I ain't seen my baby since the night before last. Gotta get a drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gotta get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk on, so listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer. One bourbon, one shot, one beer. But all right.
My baby's since I'm nigh on a week. Gotta get drunk, man, so I can't even speak. Gonna get high, man, listen to me. One drink ain't enough, Jack, you better make it three. Gonna get drunk, I'm gonna make it real clear. I want one bourbon, one scotch, one beer. One bourbon, one scotch.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, March 2nd, 2010.
Earthquake in Chile, storms for Haiti. Climate change hits coffee, plus Van Jones is back.
Mr. Glenn Beck, I see you and I love you, brother.
I love you too, brother. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and yes, snarky comments.
Nation, it was so great to be at the Winter Olympics, but it is nice to be back in actual winter.
No more trucking in snow, Stephen Colbert? This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by Velvet Revolution's Disbar Torture Lawyers campaign. The DOJ Inspector General has found that Bush's DOJ attorneys committed professional misconduct by approving torture and other war crimes. But the DOJ refuses to refer the findings to state bar associations. So, VR will. Please sign on and donate to help support this important campaign for accountability at disbartorturelawyers.com. That's disbartorturelawyers.com. Okay, Des, we're welcoming aboard our new affiliate partner, Stitcher Radio. You can now listen to the Green News on your iPhone using Stitcher Radio's really cool iPhone app. You can check it out at stitcher.com or just dial it up in the App Store. What do you have for us today, Des?
Well, the massive earthquake off the coast of Chile in the wee hours of Saturday morning has left over 700 dead, thousands injured, hundreds of thousands homeless, and thousands still missing from the tsunami generated by the quake. The contrast with the death toll from the January earthquake in Haiti is striking. 230,000 people were killed in Haiti, 723 in Chile, even though the 8.8 magnitude earthquake in Chile was hundreds of times stronger. The difference? Building codes and enforcement of building codes. Chile, the location of the biggest earthquake...
Pesky government regulation? Is that what you're arguing in favor of?
I'm not making any argument at all.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
All right.
Chile, the location of the biggest earthquake ever recorded in 1960, had the economic capacity and the government structure to enact strict building codes and standards and invest in an emergency response system. That was not an option in Haiti, the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere.
So I guess Chile and their socialist government enforcing regulations and building codes, denying freedom and liberty, may have saved thousands and thousands of lives in Chile.
Hundreds of thousands of lives. And in Haiti, the rainy season has officially begun, inundating temporary camps where over a million people rendered homeless by the quake still do not have access to adequate shelter, food, water, or medicine. A particularly intense storm over the weekend is credited with killing at least 8 people. In Europe, an intense late winter storm with hurricane-force winds and flooding is blamed for the deaths of 61 people over the weekend, mostly in France, part of a series of record storms causing flooding across northern Europe and Britain this winter. And electricity is gradually coming back on for nearly a million residents in the north Northeast U.S. after yet another winter storm blew out power over the weekend in Snowmageddon 2010. USA Today reports that this year's record snowstorms have led a record number of households to apply for public assistance to pay home heating bills, up 15% from last year, also a record. Some cold weather states have declared a moratorium on utility companies shutting off heat due to non-payment. Heating oil prices are up nearly 30% over the last year.
And what was it that scientists have been warning about for years concerning global climate change, increased storms, increased crazy weather like this?
Yes, although climate scientists have said that no one storm can be tied directly to global warming, more extreme and intense weather events are in line with their predictions, specifically in the Northeast. Now we bid a fond farewell to the Winter Olympic Games for 2010 and very likely goodbye as well to Winter Olympics ever being held in Vancouver ever again.
Why?
After lack of snow during the warmest January on record created multiple headaches for organizers, and ironically, they were forced to use fossil fuels to truck in snow for some of those outdoor events. The International Olympic Committee says it will now consider climate change in evaluating future sites. The next Winter Olympics will be held in Russia at a town said to be on the Russian Riviera. Coffee growers around the world say they are seeing signs that climate change is disrupting their business. Like vineyards, coffee beans only grow under specific conditions, and coffee growers say temperatures have been trending consistently upward rather quickly over the last 25 years. The shift is forcing them to move to higher elevations where acreage is already at a premium and is obviously in limited supply.
Whoa, wait a minute. I wasn't a believer in this whole global warming thing, but now you're saying it's messing with my coffee?
Yes.
We've got to stop this global warming, Desi.
Remember Van Jones? The Green Jobs organizer resigned from his position with the White House last year
after being harangued by Glenn Beck and these other clowns who went all McCarthyite on him.
Yeah,
they
accused him of being a communist, a Marxist, and a socialist. Van Jones is back in the public eye, receiving honors at the NAACP's Image Awards over the weekend for his work promoting green jobs in urban areas, and he had a few choice words for Mr. Beck.
To my fellow countrymen, Mr. Glenn Beck, I love you, brother. I love you, and you cannot do anything about it. I love you, and you cannot do anything about it. Let's be one country.
I'll tell you what, Van Jones is a bigger man than I to have been able to say that at the event. Good for him. Bad on Glenn Beck, who, by the way, still has his job for some odd reason. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, download us on your iPhone via Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter and download us at iTunes. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, it was too good to be true, and you knew it couldn't last, but we actually had a right-winger in the chat room for a couple of minutes and scampered off, dadgummit. Came into the chat room and said, I thought I'd just say hello to you all. I haven't listened to any good hate radio in a while. Me? Moi? Hate radio? Really? They are a thin-skinned bunch. But just to update you, you remember last week I mentioned to you the fact that the South Dakota legislature... was encouraging the teaching of the astrological causes of global warming. Well, I guess somebody else heard about it, too. And I guess that, you know, the, even morons don't like being openly pointed out as, hey, mommy, look, a moron. And it's the South Dakota legislature. So they did manage to take out their astrological influences language. But guess what? They passed the resolution telling public schools to teach balance, balance, where man-made global climate change is concerned. Right, balance. But here's one of those little markers. This is one of those little signposts down the road to full-on idiocracy America. There are 15, at least 15 state legislatures who are trying to pass measures in their states to prevent limits on greenhouse gases. No, really. 15. It's already been done in Utah and Alabama. It is under consideration in Kentucky. Let's see. Whereas the recent disclosure of communications among scientists associated with the Climate Research Unit of the University of East Anglia. Yeah, bear in mind, these dumbass crackers couldn't find East Anglia with a... has cast serious doubt upon the scientific data that have purportedly supported the finding that man-made carbon dioxide and Maryland and Oklahoma and, yes, Utah, and it goes on and on and on. And then there's the real woohoo version from, of course, Arizona and Sylvia Allen's. Oh, I smell a parody coming on. Who was that? Dr. Hook? Sylvia Allen? No, that was Sylvia's mother. Sylvia Allen is arguing that the Congress doesn't have the constitutional authority to regulate greenhouse gas pollution. And of course, she also thinks that Earth is 6,000 years old. Sylvia Allen does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 6,000 years old. Yes, that, you know, human beings and dinosaurs cohabited, like one-third of Texans think from that study, and the other another third aren't sure. Aren't sure. Not sure. Might be. Could be. The Flintstones may have actually been a documentary. God Almighty. The stupid is killing us. Is it brought on? You know, maybe that's brought on by CO2. But I got to thinking about something, and I'm going to go back to the phones in a minute. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. I got to thinking about something with regard to this whole business of CO2 can't possibly be a pollutant because it's good for you. It's in your sody pop. Remember? I mean, really, Republicans have made that argument on the floor of the House of Representatives. Well, I have a solution. I know that Barack Obama's budget proposal it shifts some money around in the NASA budget away from manned space exploration and toward robotic exploration. And that may be the smart money. You can certainly send a robot a lot further than you can send a human, and it takes a lot less work or a lot less tolerance. You don't have to build in as many tolerances, I guess, although I'm willing to stand corrected on that. I will let Tosh address that perhaps at some point if he feels like he wants to. But anyway, I was kind of bummed out when I saw that we were going to go away from manned space exploration because there's something special about that whole idea of sending human beings up to the moon. And in fact, one of the few things that George W. Bush ever did that I even remotely agreed with was trying to reinvigorate a manned space exploration program with a view toward putting people back on the moon and eventually putting someone on Mars. And that's where the global warming deniers come in, and particularly the CO2 deniers. Because, among other folks, Michelle Bachmann, Joe Barton of Texas, have stood in the House and talked about how good for you CO2 is. It's real good for you, that CO2. Okay. Being as how I'm a firm believer in science, I say let's prove how good CO2 is for a human being. And I say we do it by reinvigorating the manned space exploration program. Now, we all know that the moon has no atmosphere. Or if it does, it is minuscule. It's a vacuum. You know, what, one-third Earth gravity, and you can't go out without a fishbowl on your head. The vacuum will eat you, that kind of thing. But, and this is an important but, Mars does have an atmosphere. It most assuredly has an atmosphere. The only problem on Mars is that Mars has an atmosphere comprised of, wait for it, yes, CO2. It's just chock-a-block with CO2. There's lots of CO2 on Mars. Theoretically, if you could do something to keep water on Mars, and you could, you know, just take some springtime bedding plants, you know, some petunias and peonies and marigolds and stuff, and if you could get water to them, there's enough CO2 there that, yeah, you could plant, you know, you could just plant Mars, and the next thing you know, you got an oxygen atmosphere, right? But who needs oxygen when you have Republicans? I say that Barack Obama should reinvigorate the manned exploration, well, okay, Republican exploration of space. We need to send Republicans to Mars. It's the red planet. They're the red party, red state. I'm liking this more and more. And we won't even have to spend money on spacesuit gear for them. Because they're Republicans and they know that CO2 is good for you, so they can just hop right out of the spaceship and say, Lafayette, we are here! And just get busy breathing that CO2 that's so damn good for them. I think we should build and send an entire fleet of transport ships filled with Republicans to go and populate Mars. Because they apparently have some sort of inbuilt, maybe inbred, special ability to breathe and extract the oxygen from CO2. Man, that's a great slogan. Mars needs Republicans. Wow, we're on to something here. Just start queuing them up to the spaceships. Yeah, yeah. There's no liberals there. You can set up a free market economy. You can have pure 100% guaranteed capitalism just as soon as you figure out how to breathe CO2, because it's good for you, CO2 is. Just ask Joe Barton and Michelle Bachmann. And they're going to be there, too. They're going to be your leaders. This is a beautiful thing. And I think it's something that all Americans can get behind. I think the Repiglicans would get behind it. They'd get to live on a planet where none of us filthy liberals were. I'm sure Don Blankenship would get behind it, you know, Massey Energy. I'm sure Mobil and the rest of that crowd would get behind it, because God only knows what kind of mineral resources there are to be extracted on Mars. And all they've got to do is be able to breathe CO2, which shouldn't be a problem for them because they don't think there's anything wrong with it in the first place. Oh, Bob, says Marty, why do you hate the Martians so much? Well, you know, they're sitting there on a planet and they could be plotting evil, evil things against us. They probably are. I mean, anyone who's ever read Kurt Vonnegut's Sirens of Titan knows that there's a full-scale attack that comes from Mars. And you sure don't want something like Valentine Michael Smith from Robert A. Heinlein's The Moon is a Harsh Stranger in a Strange Land. We don't want one of those coming here. I think this has tremendous potential. Mars needs Republicans. And with a blank slate, imagine all they could do just as quickly as they learn to breathe CO2. And you know what? I'm not dogmatic. If they get there and they can breathe CO2, I guess we'll just have to reformulate all the science. Because Michelle Bachmann and Joe Barton will have been proven to be correct. Oh, and also, David in Tennessee, Mars needs guitars. Because that rhymes real good. So there's that. Here in a little bit, we are going to go back to Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry and his comments about George Bush at yesterday's pro-life event honoring the former Dem leader. Mm-hmm. We will go back to that. But right now we're going to, I hope, go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Garrett, what's up?
Well, you have to remember that the Martians, they have that ammonium Q38 space modulator.
Oh, they do, they do.
Yes, they have that.
At last, the ammonium Q38 exploding space modulator. Finally, my view of Venus will no longer be impeded by that pesky Earth.
Precisely. I mean, we've tried sending rabbits up there, and that didn't stop them, you know. Multiple times.
Oh, yeah, head for the hills, or you'll be at the armpits in Martians.
And another good thing that Cossack mentioned here in the chat room is that Harold Ford, he's dropped out. And I did a little digging around, and apparently two words are why. Chuck Schumer.
Oh, really? Chuck leaned on him?
One of the electoralvote.com says English translation: Schumer promised to destroy Harold Ford if he decided to run against his protege.
Oh, fun! And I'll bet you, yeah. Chuck could do it.
Yeah, you think? I think he could do it easily. I mean, just, you know, seeing as how seeing as how he's up with all that Wall Street money, I mean, you know, that'd be an easy target.
That could be fun. But, you know, that's okay, because there's plenty of sick and twisted in New York to go around. I got a story in earlier today from our dear friend Maura, who's just made sure that, well, she sent it along for tomorrow, but it kind of goes with today as well. Anti-gay clergy in New York. And, you know, it's so sad that this story's in New York and not Alabama or Mississippi, where you'd expect it. But anti-gay clergy in New York are backing a political candidate by the name of Hiram Montserrat.
Who named their children Hiram in the second half of the 20th century?
Well, he's running for a state Senate seat in New York after having been thrown out previously because of a domestic violence conviction. No, really.
Oh, boy. He's a real winner already.
But see, he voted, you know, he voted to uphold traditional merge. So, therefore, you know, the right wing, and increasingly, the right wing clergy is supporting him wholeheartedly. He's running in an election, a special election, to fill the vacancy created by his own expulsion.
Oh.
And his opponent is Jose Peralta, who is pro-marriage equity. So let's, you know, let's just review real quick. If you are a wife beater, you can have the endorsement of God's spokesman on earth, as long as you don't want the gays of getting married. In other words, God smiles upon wife beating, but frowns upon happy marriages between people of the same gender.
Yeah, that just about sums up the sickness of religion, America style, it seems like.
And also, the other thing that I think probably contributed to Harold Ford's decision is the fact that he's had some really lousy TV appearances lately, and he's even been openly and loudly booed at appearances. You know, when you're getting booed this early on, it really doesn't speak well for your hopes in you know, late spring or even in November. Not so much.
No, it does not. When they can't even find enough people to where you don't hate them, I mean, that's like even Jay Leno can find enough people to fill an audience who are going to actually cheer the piece of crap on. Seriously. Jay Leno can find people, a room full of people that will cheer for him and laugh at his lame attempts at humor.
I know.
I mean, he can't get any actors, well, except for Jamie Foxx, but he can get people to smile at him. I mean, he's resorting to our good buddy Sarah Palin as well. She's going to make what apparently Jay Leno has said her first late night appearance on his show this week.
Oh, that'll be a joy.
But ignoring the fact that she did appear, she appeared on Conan's show last year during one of William Shatner's attempts at reciting Sarah Palin's like Facebook post. Oh yeah,
I remember that.
His first night back. And the fool is just totally trying to obliterate the very existence of Conan. It's like, yeah, that's going to work out for you real well. Real well. I'm sorry, but, you know, no. Sorry, Jay. Your guest list, it's looking like that's what it's going to be forever. Sports figures who are roped in by the network and...
Yeah, because the network had something on them with steroids or something. Right.
Yeah, you know, the Olympic stars, Sarah Palin, and country music stars, and, you know.
Yeah, he can have all the Toby Keith he wants.
Yeah, I guess he got Brad Paisley last night. I don't know. I wouldn't watch Jay Leno if he paid me $1 million, though, at this point. And also, I can tell you who Tara Reid's going to lose to.
Yeah.
Because the polling has come out. Sue Loudon is ahead in one of the polls here that was done for here. 67% in the Republican primary.
Wow! If one of them, if the Republican, if whoever wins, if whoever wins the Republican primary in Nevada does so and does so resoundingly with regard to whoever else runs. If that person comes out with a really strong showing, like a 68% majority or 70 or 80% majority, Harry's toast.
Well, yeah. I mean, the only person that showed with any percent in the double figure, any significant percentage after her was Danny Tartakanian. And they were showing the poll numbers, too, because, you know, they were showing it on the news as well, some of the other stats. It's like, Denny Sarkanian, even though he's only got 30% of the Republican vote, he can still beat Harry Reid.
Well,
and it goes without saying that, yes, he can pull. But, yeah, it's done.
Bye, Harry.
Yeah, I mean, especially with this, I mean, you know, that Mitch the Turtle Man was, you know, behind brokering this bunning agreement.
Right, because, yeah.
Yeah, which means that Mitch is trying to save his own rear end. I mean, because people, it's obvious, especially with the, what you said about the AFL-CIO, the people have woken up because they're just, everybody's losing their shirts, except for the rich people. They're angry, and they know why, especially with Bunning. Bunning made it crystal clear which side is not the good side right now in the Senate. I mean, he crystallized it perfectly, and that's why Mitch wanted him out so, wanted it over with so swiftly, to save his party's rear end.
Right, because there, you know, this is the one thing that finally stands a chance of sticking to the Republicans.
I mean, and apparently that Huffington Post article that you're discussing, apparently the papers in Kentucky are ripping not only, but ripping apart Rand Paul and his opponent for Bunning's seat because they're both happy with it. The Democratic opponent, the Democratic primary guys are slamming it to high heaven, and one of them, he's already started a petition saying that this is wrong. I mean, and it's not, I don't know the leaning of, I mean, I certainly don't know the leaning of any papers in Kentucky for their politics.
Every now and then you'll, and I think Corey in Louisville could probably fill us in better,
yeah.
But every now and then you'll get a meaningfully erudite opinion out of the Louisville Courier-Journal. The Lexington News Leader,
Yeah, but yeah, it's just, I mean, it's the best gift that we could have asked for is Bunning being a fool, because, I mean, he's destroying the Republicans, he's destroying his own reputation, because did you look at that internet ad that they had for Bunning, they basically, I think it was Move On that did it, that on that Huffington Post story, is like, he's totally calling him the dirtiest player of his generation and all of this, you know, and punctuating his behavior.
And then Mitch McConnell gets up on the floor of the Senate and does this weeping bye-bye speech to one of his aides who's going off to form a sleazy Washington lobbying outfit. Did you run across this?
Yeah, I ran across that too. That's hilarious. Cause
I mean, maybe others haven't heard this yet. This is just stunning. Now, here we are, 27,400 Texans, not Americans, just the Texans, are going to run out of their unemployment coverage. Medicare doctor payments have been cut by 21%. The federal transportation workers furloughed. You know, this is real serious infrastructure stuff that affects the essential integrity of our country to get its job done, Gary. You know?
I mean, Nevada's going to a four-day work week.
Yeah. And so Mitch McConnell rises to say bye-bye to his longtime aide. This is just...
And when I think of what Kyle is...
Come on, Mitch.
A very special episode of Mitch McConnell.
When I think of what Kyle has meant to me over the past 15 years.
Oh, tell us, Mitch. God, if he had a chin, it'd be quivering.
I can't help but think that's exactly what he's been to me.
Are you sure this is an aide and not, like, you know, a boyfriend or something? Or family member?
This is what you do when you've been dumped by your boyfriend.
I mean, seriously.
I mean, this is... This
he's been that steady presence in the midst of it all. As long as he was there, the team was confident. Things would turn out well, and they always did. To me, he's been more than a staffer.
I'll bet!
He's been a colleague, a confidant, and a dear friend.
And I am being told by a Kentuckian, stupid advertisement. I'm being told by a Kentuckian, namely our buddy Tobias. Yeah, that's what he was. Namely, you know, boyfriend.
Yeah, Tobias just logged in. Yeah, that's I love it when I call him just so exactly. But yeah, that's like, I mean, that's. Too melodramatic to not be. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, honest to God, he's not Mitch McConnell. He's Mitch McCloset.
I mean, come on. If Sam Cedar appears on the Young Turks on Friday morning, I hope he plays that bit and has the sappy, you know, instrumental, Bette Midler instrumental music that he does. Of his, because that's what it's asking for. Because, oh, God, that's just, oh, that is comedy gold.
Oh, and David in Tennessee noting, Kyle has meant so much. Yeah, more than the minority mail order bride I've had my way with for lo that, well, not really had his way with, but.
Oh, boy. Oh.
And, you know, again, it's not about the sex, it's about the hypocrisy.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing.
I mean, I've heard from a number of sources that Mitch is a big old open secret, and, you know, him and Lindsay and a few others, you know, everybody just knows that, well, you know, they are.
Yeah,
And it's okay.
For us.
Well, it's okay by us. You know, be who you are, be happy. Closets are hell, yeah. Closets are toxic, closets are deadly.
Well, I mean, for us as in the Republicans, it's okay for us, but you guys, you can't be okay. You can't be happy. It's all about stepping on all of us.
And you know, where Harry Reid is concerned, David in South Carolina pointing out, he says, I'm so sick of this weak-kneed approach. Compromises are made when they're not needed. Please, everybody, contact Harry Reid's office and tell him we need more tiers of emergency unemployment benefits or current tiers expanded. The tepid legislation he has now does nothing to help people who are on the last tier of benefits. It only allows people to complete all four tiers. This will be millions of people. No compromise, no surrender.
But he will. I mean, even if... we confronted it right to his face, he's not a fighter. It's just as simple as that. I still don't understand how he made that position in the Senate.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to snort. I just got a line from Tobias that hurt me.
Oh.
In regard to Mitch McConnell. Because this, you'll probably snort too. In describing Mitch McConnell, Tobias says the phrase here in Kentucky is, that man's queer as a football bat. I'm not well right now. Sometimes one of them just gets you, and that one just right across. Oh, I just got poleaxed.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
That's up there with Rick Sanchez over the weekend with the earthquake. Is like how about the whole tsunami wave amongst his other offenses with that? It's like, what does that mean? What does 9 feet mean? Or 9 meters or whatever it was.
Call Mitch, he can explain.
Oh, boy. But, yeah, it's just never ending.
Queer as a hockey ball.
A hockey ball.
Oh, help me. Oh, man. I'm going to have to take... Garrett, I'm sorry, my friend. I'm going to have to take a break and get this out of my system.
Yeah, I
Oh, it's so, you know, these are such cleansing little laughs every now and then. Oh, my God. Oh, I, oh, oh.
For these laughs, we'd go insane. Just think of it that
yeah, way. Yeah, I so owe Tobias for this one. Garrett, take care.
You too, Paul.
See ya. Oh, God, how I love good language. Mmm. Yeah, in the chat room, Sparky. Don't weep, don't cry, Mitch. You can find a new special friend. So yeah, I think a break is in order while I recollect my composure. Not often I get whacked like that, but when I do, oh my God, when I do. Join in the fun. You know how, right? This is a radio show. It's a call-in program where you get more than two, you know, more than 25 seconds, and the host doesn't scream into the microphone, have a take, and don't suck. Okay? I mean, join in the fun. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Yeah, after the whole Mars needs Republicans thing, how can I not? This is kind of called for. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. The PayPal button's at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. Just saying. This is The Horn.
rocking with the human race. Can you hear that? And don't stop, just blast off. Sure shot, cause the man from Mars stopped eating cars and eating bars, and now he only eats guitars. Yeah!
Of the free market state of Republican Mars. Debbie Harry and Blondie, of course, and Rapture, that song of the iconic, to say the very least. But, yeah, Mars needs guitars. Mars, how can you not go there? It is hard to beat the DJ and out of an old jock. So that was refreshing. And I'm all sobered up now. I've gotten over my case of cereal giggles. Yeah, those are just refreshing when you get them. We've got a few minutes before the top of the hour, and yeah, there's some very heady serious stuff to cover, but while we're working silly, let's get this one out of the way. You do remember, I should save this for tomorrow night, but I can't. I've been saving it for too long. You do remember when Jerry Falwell had a hissy about Tinky Winky, claiming that Tinky Winky was gay? Remember? Because, you know, brothers and sisters, Tinky Winky has a triangle on his head. And that triangle, that is the symbol of gayness in America. And he carries a purse. That means he's probably a transsexual gay puppet. And, you know, not to be left behind in the crazy department, the Focus on the Family. Dr. James Dobson. Yeah, one of those doctors who couldn't put on a Band-Aid without threatening someone's life. Dr. James Dobson, who said, you know, beat disobedient children until they cry real tears, who said the way that you keep your son from catching a bad case of the gay is by getting in the shower with him and showing him your love muscle. Yeah, that James Dobson. He followed on the heels of the gay Tinky Winky by declaring that, by God, there was an absolute infestation of gay animated characters, because he had determined through, I don't know, maybe he waterboarded. Now, how could you waterboard SpongeBob? Maybe he dryboarded SpongeBob to determine that SpongeBob, too, was a card-carrying closet case. Well, they're at it again. Only it's not really, it's not really the gay thing. In this case, it's... I need some of my friends from the kink community to help me with this one, because I don't know what you call this kink. Because out in Colorado Springs, they've been having a little bit of a hissy. There's a Tony Award-winning musical road show called Avenue Q. And it's on tour throughout the country, and it's about people and puppets
who are trying to find their way in New York City. And these are, of course, they're kind of, you know, Muppet-style puppets. They're not real Muppets because Disney owns owns Kermit's green ass now. They're not real Muppets, but they're, you know, Muppet-style. That kind of, you know, soft plush kind of foam rubber, you know. The show that deals with things that they describe as adult situations, namely sex, drinking. The most popular song from the production is called "The Internet Is for Porn," and yeah, it's headed for Colorado Springs, home of Jesus and the Air Force Academy and James Dobson, where they can't mow the grass anymore or pick up the trash in the parks. Pack it in, pack it out, citizen. And there was a poster promoting it March 16th and 17th, $20 show, PikesPeakCenter.com. Okay? And the poster shows an expanse of pink, and I guess they're pink breastises, hot pink breastises, and what is probably a pendant hanging above them that says Lucy. And the pink foam rubber fur-covered, fuzz-covered breastises are covered by what appears to be a blue fuzzy bra with in big, bold, red banner across the cleavage, censored, warning. And the poster's been banned by a billboard executive in the city of Colorado Springs. Asked why they had banned the poster of the not real, but rather made out of foam rubber and covered in fuzz, puppet breasts. The executive said, "Well, you see, we want to take a more conservative approach. Don't you understand? We need to take a conservative approach because I guess kink, they are so screwed down and so locked down and so uptight and so absolutely just weirded out their eyeballs because of the repressive sexual attitudes that have been forced upon that community by the right wing weird asses who took control of the Air Force Academy, and the right-wing weirdos of the Focus on the Family. They're so screwed up and so locked down and so hung up that even fake foam rubber puppet boobies can drive them into paroxysms of sexual ecstasy. This is, after all, Pastor Ted Haggard's town, where the repression was so thick for him that it finally just all boiled over and he wound up snorting crystal meth off of a gay hooker's penis. I've heard Colorado Springs is a beautiful place, but God almighty, I mean, these people are beginning to put the old Bostonians to shame. I mean, Tinky Winky and SpongeBob, and now hot pink-breasted Lucy. I hate to tell them, but it's all around us. It's everywhere. Shh. Don't tell the billboard executive in Colorado Springs, but the Porky Pig doesn't wear the pants. Got a little shirt, got a little tie, got a little hat, but that's all, folks. No pants. Then there's Kermit the Frog. Kermit the Frog, naked for Sesame Street News. That place must be about to just bust. And I don't know if I want to be around when it does. That's disturbing. It is disturbing to be that hung up, that kinked. Because when it does bust out, I mean, James Dobson will go running down the main drag in a feather boa. It just makes you wonder about how well it, it what how do these people live? With that kind of weirdness buried inside them. There's just twisted. Bad twisted. Really? A poster? A fake puppet breasts is too much for Colorado Springs to cope with? You know, and I'm being asked, have you good old boys ever considered that those queer as a blank lines offend some fellas who are dying in the closet? Just saying. That's the whole point. Quit dying in the closet. Get out. God knows. And frankly, if chinless Mitch McConnell is one of those people dying in the closet, I wish to hell he would hurry up and die sooner. Because of all the anguish he is heaping on other people. Yeah, Marty, you're right. It's not too awful far from Columbine, but it's not in Colorado Springs proper. So, puppets. Puppets, puppets, puppets will make them kinky. I think we'll have to take a break. And we'll come back and do very, very, very serious things. Just not yet. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? What's on the other side? But only illusions. Rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe.
Son of a bitch, didn't you?
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yeah, about 9 minutes past 8 p.m. here on the East Coast in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. God love you wherever you are, whatever time it is you're listening. Just glad to know that you are. Yeah, I tried to find the Kermit the Frog version of that last song, but it just happened for me. So, Sarah McLachlan's What You Got. But how could I resist the Porky Pig? It's just impossible. Can't be done. All right. I know how this is going to work out. There's going to be 6 phone calls at 15 minutes until 9 p.m., and everybody's going to get pissed off if Bob didn't get to them in time. That's how this is going to work. But that being the case, I'm forging ahead. By God. Yeah, I mentioned something earlier, way back at the top, around the top of the last hour. A little something about a benefit, you know, a fundraiser down in Texas at a place called the Prestonwood Baptist Church. They had a Friends for Life fundraiser. And the fundraiser was to benefit the Prestonwood Pregnancy Center. Now, I have no idea what a Prestonwood Pregnancy Center is. Is that where they sequester pregnant women? Because you shouldn't be seen in public, darling. You're dirty right now. You're with child. Because, you know, you didn't abstinent. Well, whatever the Prestonwood Pregnancy Center is, dim leaders showed up for the benefit. Now, this thing had 10-person tables that were going for as much as $2,500 a pop. And, in fact, a consultant for the pregnancy center explained why they were honoring former dim leader. The fact that he was the most pro-life president since Ronald Reagan is very significant. Yeah, no kidding. The most pro-life president. So they gave him an award. Texas gubernatorial Republican candidates Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison and Governor Rick Goodhair Perry both attended the event. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison didn't say anything, but by God, Rick Goodhair Perry did. He stood up and he said, "I feel like I'm in the garrison of an army that has devoted itself to the defense of the unborn." Well, that's good, because he certainly wasn't in the presence of the garrison of an army that's dedicated to protecting the Dunborn. Because the Dunborn can go fly a damn kite as far as a pig licking is concerned. The Dunborn can, well, you know, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps there, Junior. That's what conservatism and the free market's all about. What? You ain't got no boots? Screw you! And he went on to say, there is no way to tell how many lives were protected by your fearless pro-life efforts. Yeah, he said this to George W. Bush.
Yeah, there she was in the death chamber, saying, please don't kill me. Please don't kill me.
Yeah. And, you know, the Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry is probably correct. There probably is no way to tell how many lives were protected by Bush's fearless pro-life efforts, never mind the fact that he had the presidency, the House, the Senate, and the Supreme Court, and the Republican Party still did nothing, nothing to eliminate abortion in this country. They had the power in their hands. They did nothing. Because they didn't want to. You see, they had no interest in it. Because the pro-life movement is what makes sure that the Preston Wood Baptist Church has a nice hustle going. And if they ever got rid of abortion, then the Preston Wood Baptist Church wouldn't be able to get its mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers out into the streets and into the election booths. There wouldn't be anything left to vote about because they damn sure don't care about war. They don't care about the wholesale slaughter of entire villages of Dunborn. No, we can't. We can't tell how many lives George W. Bush may have saved by his fearless pro-life efforts. Can't do that. But thanks to medical and social sciences, we can quantify the number of lives he eliminated. Oh, yes, by God, we can. And the number of innocents whose blood was shed on the word of pig-eyed, jug-eared George W. Bush has passed 1 million. For people like the right winger who were in the chat room earlier, the way you quantify that here, let me see if I can quantify this in Glenn Beck terms for you. The number of people who died on the word of George W. Bush is 1/6 of Hitler. How's that? You understand now why I want nothing to do with the Baptist Church? Why I want nothing to do with fundamentalism or evil jealousism? Because they can praise a man who did nothing to protect life and instead actively campaigned against lives of those already living. Do you think for an instant that one of those cruise missiles he ordered into some godforsaken village or in Iraq or Afghanistan didn't have a pregnant woman in it? Where mother and baby were both killed in one explosive strike. Jesus criminy. You know, and this is just the second in a series, because recently former DIM leader was honored by a Catholic group in California called Legatus. Legatus means lieutenant. Legatus. They gave him a pro-life award. Mars needs Republicans. This story dated February 4th. Former President Bush expected to receive award in Dana Point. Former President George W. Bush is scheduled to receive an award honoring his pro-life beliefs from a Roman Catholic organization Friday in Dana Point.
Organizers of the Legatus Organization's annual summit at the St. Regis Monarch Beach Hotel. Yeah, so much for that feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, and housing the homeless. Now, no, all that stuff in Matthew, forget it. Because we're going to have a meeting at the Blessed St. Regis. See, it's got Saint in the name. The Blessed St. Regis Monarch Beach Hotel. Glory to Jesus. Praise. Legatus is a Catholic organization that seeks to bring business leaders and their spouses together through their faith. Oh, really? No kidding. Got to give them points for chutzpah, if nothing else. Mother. That one's a little hard to swallow. 17 minutes past the hour, and we will go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? 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 Okay, gave up. Try again. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yeah, Cassie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good.
I was just screaming at the phone while you were saying hello to the other person.
No, well, don't do that.
But I did. Well, I wasn't sure. I don't know. Whatever. I got into Princeton.
You got? Oh my God.
I got into Princeton.
Hot diggity.
That's two Ivies for people who are keeping track.
Yeah, that's Cassie two, Ivies two.
No, two for three, but that's okay.
No, well, no, you rejected Yale.
Well, they rejected me the same time. Rejected them. We rejected each other.
Right, it was mutual.
Yeah, it was a mutual rejection. But
when did you find this out?
Like an hour ago.
So at this point, your choices are, for all intents and purposes, I mean, there are other schools that have accepted you, but for all intents and purposes, you're down to Brown and Princeton.
Yeah.
Any more still outstanding?
No. No, I've now heard from everyone, and I mean, this assumes that all the financial aid goes the way that I want it to.
But we're keeping our fingers crossed for that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine you're a little...
You were talking about George Bush, and I was going to say something, but now I'm, like, lost.
Well, say anything you want. And you know what? That includes, I got into Princeton, You can do that too, Cassie.
Okay. I don't think I can talk about anything else. I got, I can't talk about anything. I can't talk about anything. But, yeah, I'm kind of floating.
Well, a full-on celebration has broken out in the chat room and via email.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're getting some serious woohoo action.
Cool.
So you gotta work out the financial aid thing, and then you've just got to figure out how to do the room and board thing.
Yeah.
Now you have visited both campuses, Cassie. Or I'm sorry, let's get our Latin square. You have visited both compi. What are your initial impressions?
I really liked both of them, and I really liked both universities. And I've met a lot of people who've gone to Brown, and I've never met anyone who didn't like it. I've never met anyone who didn't think that it was absolutely phenomenal. But Princeton's phenomenal also, and I talk to me tomorrow.
Well, I'm completely incoherent. You can't believe that I got into it.
I believe it. I'll tell you this, Cassie. I expected it. Maybe you didn't, but I did. I expected you to get into one of these schools.
Well, I know, but I wasn't sure.
I know, because there are a lot of people out there who have more faith in you than you have faith in you.
Well, and there's just so many people who apply.
But you have busted your rear end, and you have worked at this with laser beam focus for a long time. And God, it is so exquisite to hear that it's paying off.
Yeah. I'm really excited.
So are you beginning to think about, ooh, what am I going to study? I mean, is it still journalism? Is it still, I mean, what?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, yes, probably journalism, but also probably political science. I don't know. I've thought about it, and I've thought about a lot of stuff, but I don't know particularly. But I still have a lot of the same career goals and the same things in mind, but I'm not quite sure how I'm going to get there.
Yeah, I was just asking in the chat room. Doesn't Paul Krugman teach at Princeton?
Yes.
How cool would being in that class be?
Oh, that would be amazing.
Of course, he probably only teaches graduate students or something like that. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, don't apologize for not talking about something else, because I would think there was something wrong with you if this wasn't what you were talking about. Well, you know, Bob, I really, George W. Bush was a total disaster for Texas. And did I tell you that I've gotten admitted to two Ivy League schools? did I mention that?
Yeah. But Bush was a moron.
Well, yes, he was. And as was noted in the chat room, he only got into Yale because he was a legacy. You got into Princeton by yourself. That says something.
Well, if this is the first day that you figured out that I'm smarter than George Bush, then we don't talk enough.
Oh, no. This is not the first day. Oh, we've known that for a while.
I'm a lot smarter than George Bush.
Yes. Vastly so.
I was smarter than George Bush, like, when I was 2 days old.
Pretty much. All those fetuses that George Bush cares about, every one of them in utero are smarter than him.
Yeah.
Which says a lot.
So all these right wingers who are all carrying on about the pro-life stuff,
mm-hmm.
How many of them are giving money so that pregnant ladies in Haiti can give birth in a hospital and not.
Oh, sorry. No. You're misunderstanding, Cassie. Those are brown pregnant ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, don't let that. No. Of course, they've got the. Oh, what was the name of that joint? They've got the Preston Wood Baptist Church Preston Wood Pregnancy Center. I can only imagine what sort of medieval horror that place must be. You're pregnant. You're bad. You're evil. You're wicked. You're just like Eve.
Even when they're married?
Well, you don't need the Preston Wood Pregnancy Center if you're married. If you're married and pregnant, you just kind of stay out of sight so that, you know, you won't, so that people won't be remembered, because, you know, good Baptists don't think about sex. Just one day you come home, one day you go to the hospital, and the next day you come back with a baby. Got a new shipment in.
There's something wrong with good Baptists. There's a lot wrong with good.
Yeah, there's 16 million degrees of screwed up.
Yeah.
we don't have to worry about that. Because you got in to Princeton.
And I know how to not get pregnant.
Really? You can, wow.
Well, I didn't learn it at school. Don't worry.
Oh, okay. Okay. I mean, we wouldn't want you to have any of those socialist sex education classes. Or it's dirty.
Oh, we have sex education. Our sex education doesn't involve actually preventing pregnancy.
No, it's all about just saying no, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just say no and scaring you. And scaring you about diseases.
Well, there's lots
of... If you kiss a boy, you're going to get 400 diseases.
Jeez. Yeah, and isn't there an urban teenage legends about something involving Mountain Dew? I seem to recall talking about that with John and Peter one night on the horn section back when that existed. But yeah, don't worry. Yeah, because you're in Texas. You didn't learn about how that didn't happen in school.
No. No, we just learned to say no to everything. Because, you know, that works so well.
So the worst that...
That's why we have the highest teen pregnancy rate.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And, you know, lots of stuff rolling in, congratulations and so forth. Kate just wrote in and said, you know, Cassie, I'm not surprised, but I am happy, grinning hugely here. And remember, a little bit of advice, no need to pick a major in the first semester. You'll change your mind several times. You may even have like 4 or 5 semesters. So just get in there and get those core classes down and then go into the candy shop of studying whatever you want to study.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I can't wait.
Well, whether it's Princeton or Brown, remember you are under an obligation to start the Horn Ivy League chapter.
Yep, I know.
Right. And there are lots of people who will be willing to engage in telephone bed check. Cassie, turn out the light. Class in the morning. No blowing off the 8:30 classes.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't.
I'm not going to take the 8:30 class.
Oh, soon. You know, you think you're not.
I don't even start till 9. I'm not going to take the 8:30 class.
No. See, sooner or later, you'll get roped into one. Because it'll be the only time that they offer it that you can get into it. Because remember, the rest of the entering freshman class is thinking, I'm not taking any 8:30 classes. They're thinking that, too.
Yeah.
Guess what? You're going to have 8:30 classes.
So I also have a possibility for doing an internship this summer in Washington.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
With whom?
Yeah. The Nation.
Don't know them.
The Nation?
Oh, The Nation. I thought you said Venetian. Really?
The Nation.
The Nation. Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
D.C. is a great place to be young.
Well, I mean, that's part of why I looked at schools on the East Coast. Because if I'm going to be a president someday, I want to, you know. I've still never seen D.C. except from 5 to 6 in the morning driving through it.
Right. Yeah, you want that experience.
I need to, yeah.
And remember, Princeton, Princeton, of course, is the alma mater of James Madison and Aaron Burr.
And Michelle Obama.
Right. This is just very important, Cassie, do not think that just because former Secretary of State George Shultz had the Princeton Tiger tattooed on his buttock, that you have to do the same. Because you don't.
I was going to put it on the parts that can't go on an ad.
See? No, Cassie, no little Princeton Tiger belly button ring either.
Okay.
Save that for your Phi Beta Kappa fob.
Okay.
All right, I gotta go.
All right, Cassie, have a wonderful night. We're so proud of you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye. Ha ha, Cassie made it. Cassie got admitted to Princeton. And Brown. You know, I wouldn't want, it's a delightfully maddening little choice. I wouldn't want to be in the position of having to make it. Because, well, let's see, one of my favorite professors of all time, my Latin professor, came from Brown. Joe Paterno comes from Brown. And, of course, Princeton has all that history. You know, it's a choice between Rhode Island and New Jersey. I don't know. It would be tough, without a doubt. Let's see, rolling in via the email. Hey, Bob, this coming from Ron in Raleigh. Tell Cassie to try and stretch this stint in college to about 10 years of undergrad, grad school, and postgrad, because all of those together come out to about 9-plus years. This current garbage we're going through should be just about done by then. And then Ron also says, kudos on the Princeton acceptance. Adding, and Ron, you got to understand, there was a long list of, hey, Cassie, you've got to apply here. Ron adds, I am disappointed, however, that you didn't apply to the University of Virginia, the Princeton of the South. Oh, the list was long, Ron. The list was long. I mean, just the list from Bob was ridiculous. I was including things like the University of the South, Suwanee, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. Lots of schools. Williams in Massachusetts. But, you know, Princeton, Brown, that's not low-hanging college fruit. That's picking way up on the branches. And bless her heart, Cassie decided to go for it, and she did it. And like the rest of you, I am so incredibly proud of her for setting a goal, sticking to it, seeing it through, and meeting with success. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, I guess this means I'm on.
You are indeed.
Boy, it's been a while. This is Alan calling from Miami.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm getting along.
Getting along. Okay, well, just thought I'd give a call when you string a little bit earlier about the... So not everybody piled into the last 15 minutes. I thought I'd give a holler. Say hello.
I'm glad you did.
I was listening to that gathering you had the other night. I was watching on your website where you had McGovern and some of those people together. It was kind of interesting to see pulling some people together where you are.
It was absolutely fascinating. And because the setting was so intimate, Alan, there was a real opportunity to engage in dialogue and discussion. And, you know, so often with these things, you don't get that.
Well, this made me, there was something that was sort of on my mind. I hadn't been listening for a while. I just been dealing with, you know, my personal life. You know, sometimes there is personal life, too. Right? At times, some of us forget that. But it reminded me that with the talk about the media, and some of it was a little bit, you know, maybe optimistic about what you can do and how you can talk to somebody in the media and get them to do something by presenting a story to them. I think we're a little bit beyond that at this point. And it reminded me of a letter I wrote to NPR this week. Actually, it was last week, I suppose. And do you mind if I go into that a bit?
No, please do.
It had to do with Talk of the Nation, which I don't know how familiar you are with that program.
I don't get it on our local NPR. We're not quite that plugged in yet.
Classical music.
Yes. Yeah. We get news in the morning, news in the afternoon, and classical music.
How about that? Well, culture.
Yeah, and that's not slamming classical music.
No, of course not. But you know, why would they put it exactly on the station where there's some some people with, you know, wide eyes and a little bit of interest in what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, have it on its own. The classical station is fine.
What you know, I love the public radio setup that David in Tennessee has described from time to time. I guess he's got access on the AM and FM bands there in Nashville to something like four different iterations of NPR.
Uh-huh.
With all kinds of talk. And if you mentioned Talk of the Nation, that's the same sort of thing that he's getting. Sounds like an interesting program, but...
Well, actually, in theory it is. In practice, I mean, I don't listen to it all that often anymore because I've had differences with the host from that program. I think that, you know, is a closet neocon, Neil Conan, just his history of what he's done. Several times I've had to, in the past, have to write to the ombudsman there, and this is what I ended up doing this week. He interviewed John Yoo. And if you don't mind my just reading this thing that I sent to him.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Here we go. They said, the host of the show, Neil Conan, had John Yoo as a guest and treated him with such respect that it prompted me to write the following. I felt distressed and queasy listening to Neil Conan's deferential on-air treatment of John Yoo, the man who gave us, quote, legal cover to the most heinous abuse of both humans in U.S. custody and to our Constitution. That air of so-called neutrality only gives credence to Yoo's twisted logic of protecting America and the abilities of the president to, quote, defend us. Lost, of course, is the big picture, which shows that virtually nothing we've done officially as a nation since 9/11 has either brought us closer to understanding the events leading to that day, nor have they increased our true security in any meaningful way. It has brought us less democracy, not more. It does exactly what officials have claimed that our enemies intend to do here. The very notion that physical answers, pain, degradation, prisons, spying, airport inspections, fences, barriers, that physical answers can solve political problems would be laughable if it were not so serious. If we wanted to start an all-out effort, such as what's done when we went to the moon, aimed at reducing democracy and destroying our liberties at home and making Americans fearful and paranoid, and at the same time recruiting enemies abroad, there is little that would not resemble what our tax dollars have been going to for the last 10 years. Invading countries, threatening others, interfering in and further inciting civil wars, over a million dead, millions of refugees, tax-paid mercenary armies, drone bombing that kills civilians while it kills justice. Brutal yet whimsical aggression, just because we can. Truth be said, we actually can't because we had to hawk our nation to do it. Talk about living beyond one's means. We are abusing beyond our means. All of this at a price which costs us not only any pretense at the moral high road, but also costs us the quality of our very health care, our education, our social services, and our ability to respond to disasters. Further costs include the loss of habeas corpus and other constitutional guarantees and the ability to have our representatives speak out freely on those issues. John Yoo represents the barrier between these recent actions of our nations done in our names and on our nickel and our understanding of the dynamic which lay behind them. His opinions turned into actions cover rather than seek the truth. Torture, or whatever euphemism for it they come up with this week, is always about creating a climate of fear and intimidation, never about justice, never about finding root problems or seeking solutions. It creates a climate necessary for millions not to question the most egregious abuses of rights, laws, and authority. The use of torture always presumes we are always right. This goes hand in hand with the notion that the only thing separating us from having others agree with, or at least accept, our policies is our ability to apply enough force to make them. Use of torture degrades us, thus making us less secure. Advocating its use degrades the very notion of humanity. This is known as might makes right. It's been tried before. This is what you represent in defense. So, Neil Conan's attempt at collegiality and fairness with you as a guest in the light of a decade of violations of international treaties by the U.S., colossal U.S. interventionism abroad, fighting and killing in the name of democracy while alarmingly repressing it at home, is really a mockery of fairness. And that's what I think.
And I think it is very well sent, Alan.
At the height of all indignity to have to listen to this guy Conan falling over himself, almost kissing the guy. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And he's a professor of law here, and he kept reciting the books he'd published. Yeah, right. Hitler also published Mein Kampf. You know, so it was
right.
Like having him on and saying, hey, well, you know, those of you who would be interested, he has a book published. Good Lord. That's NPR. That's the other side, the other face of NPR.
Is, and I'm just curious. You say you think that he's a sort of closet neocon. Is he always that fawning over right wing guests?
Well, I had a sort of a footnote, which since I sent this not to him directly but to the ombudsman, I wrote, sadly, this is not surprising of Conan's on air behavior. As for years, in this observer's view, he has consistently derided common people's attempts to be heard over the din of the quote official story of the media spin machine, even as he sometimes affords them a bit of space. Yeah, he's done years. I just hear he pushes people out of the way. I've called up in the past and questioned the credentials of some of his guests on there. And that was, of course, just thrown away. You know, sort of like, how dare you? You know, when they would often refer to somebody from the Washington Times as a journalist. You know, and you know, I had no problem with getting on there and talking about, you know, well, they're just Moonies, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, no. Did you? First of all, did you get a response from the ombudsman?
Oh, until now, no. I circulated the letter amongst friends, and
is there a possibility? And this is not just me being disagreeable to be disagreeable, and I'm not even really being disagreeable. But is there a possibility that John Yoo was brought on there in order to allow him to hang himself with his own words? Did he do that at all?
No. To the contrary. No. I wish, I mean, if that was, I mean, they're putting it, that's the kind of thing that Bill Moyers would do. Right?
Sure.
He, when Bill Moyers is on, he often acts as the devil's advocate and asks, this guy didn't ask anything tough of you. No, I mean, in this case, I mean, obviously, we're talking about my opinion here. But I was talking with a very close friend, a dear friend I've had for years, and happened to mention that I had written this thing to NPR about this thing. He said he also happened to be listening that day to he says he was incensed. He said this is ridiculous. So I ended up sending out copies of it, you know, to other folks. But yeah, I'm not the only person who heard and sensed it. And I remember, this is quite a few years ago, but I remember calling up once, asking something about, you know, you'll excuse the expression, Ralph Nader. And he just said, you know, well, we're only dealing with serious candidates here. Sort of threw it away. Doesn't matter, you know, they're ideas we're talking about. Ideas is serious matters, not about serious candidates. Serious candidates, from his point of view, is what the mainstream.
Well, yeah,
who has money.
Right, and I hate that. I hate that definition, that serious candidate business, because you know what? There was no more serious human being on the campaign trail than Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah. Serious, yeah. Let's go. Let's talk serious. But let's talk, you know, we have to have a new lexicon for the American people, because the one they've used and abused is no longer serves our purpose.
You know, I got a notice today that Dennis Kucinich has announced the introduction of a privilege resolution to end the Afghan war. Somebody who's not serious isn't going to bother to do that.
Right. Nor to spend 5 hours on the floor of the House reading charge after charge of impeachment against Cheney.
But when he showed up for one of those pageants, and I'm not sure if it was Brian Williams or Wolf Blitzer or, you know, whichever talking prostitute it was, the only question that could be put to Dennis Kucinich was, have you really seen a flying saucer?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And then there was another pageant where somebody asked boxers or briefs.
Yeah, I mean, how can they talk about serious candidates? Well, I mean, we're asking...
When they're not doing serious journalism.
Right, there's no... But the thing is, it's understood to them that they're doing journalism. They're doing ownership journalism. Serious journalism to them means the same thing as serious candidates. Is money backing it? If money is backing it, then it's serious. Money backs their phony journalism, therefore it's serious. That's why I say we have to change the terms of the vocabulary, the glossary. It's been appropriate.
Well, I'm such a hardcore, I suppose, Alan, that I don't believe that, you know, I think mothers with small children should cross to the other side of the street at the mere sight of John Yoo.
Oh.
I think the man should be standing in the dock at The Hague.
Oh. Yeah, that the least. That
and you know, bless their hearts. If you heard earlier the Green News report, it was sponsored by Velvet Revolution, mm-hmm. and they have a full-on effort that I've been, you know, it's another one of those cases of me getting to something before others did. But you know, we lack the infrastructure, and I have been crying in the wilderness for well over a year now. Will someone please file bar complaints against John Yoo? And Jay Bybee.
Well,
you know, these stories that came out about him that go even further than the heinous evil that the man manifested are just eye-bugging in the scope of their maliciousness. This argument that he presented that had even the loyal Bushies redacted it, Alan. This thing where he could order the slaughter of a village full of civilians.
If it's necessary, determined by the president. But this evil, he served the ultimate evil in that he was protecting those who were practicing evil. And as you say, yeah, across the other side of the street, well, that's minimal. In the old days, he and his colleagues would have burned someone else at the stake. I think. But, you know...
And there are so many different wrongnesses, for lack of a better word, that attend on all of this. You know, if he had gone and become a law professor at Pepperdine, I wouldn't have been surprised. Wasn't Pepperdine the one that wanted to or did hire Ken Starr to be their dean or their provost or their, you know, Lord High Dreagle? I wouldn't have been surprised. This is Bolt Hall, the College of Law at the University of California, Berkeley.
I know. I mean, you know, the whole free speech movement started there and what have you. I mean, it's been out of our hands for a long time, and the media being controlled and manipulated and bought, sold as it is. I mean, it's always been growing in that general direction. But before the PNAC neocons were able to pull off all of their coups and things, starting in 2000 or maybe earlier for all we know, they really had to not only get us into a state of war with war presidents, they had to get that. In order to get there, they had to have the media pretty well sewn up. And, you know, bless his heart, Bill Clinton clicked his heels and cooperated with further concentration of the media. And the fact that Obama's so-called Justice Department didn't even slap Yoo's wrist. I no longer hold out any kind of hope, which is what they were selling, for this administration, in that protecting the previous administration from investigation is tantamount to further shredding of the Constitution and essentially doing a similar job that John Yoo did. And so, you know, I don't see any hope there. Whatever it's going to come from, if it comes from anywhere, it's going to be from some other movement within the people. Because
this recent statement by Yoo, Alan, where he said, I may have saved the Obama presidency. My, you know, this is hubris at a Greek tragedy level.
Well, the Obama's presidency saved him, too. This is, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, while Obama represented grassroots energy and even money at the beginning of his campaign, I think once it became obvious that he was going to run with it away from Hillary, corporate America realized, I think, instantly that, wait a minute, we're not backing Palin and McCain. For God's sake, if they get into office, we're going to have minimally 4 years of people still screaming, moaning. The best way to continue with the policies is to have Obama silence all the questioners and all the people who have heart and insight. And that's what they've done. Because he's the only one who, at the time, after 8 years of Bush-Cheney, could silence the people, I hesitate to say on the left, but anywhere, you know, further to the left of center-right.
Well, let me ask you this. Excuse me just a second. Let me ask you this in the context of the Talk of the Nation thing. As I understand it, that's more of a news show than it is an opinion show. Is that a fair characterization?
Not really. It's a call-in show. It's one of NPR's few call-in shows. It's a live, nationwide call-in show. And I have special attachment to it because Talk of the Nation was originally created by John Hockenberry. I don't know if you know John
Hockenberry. I reckon, yeah.
He's the real deal. John Hockenberry is real journalist. And he used to do a marvelous show called, I think it was called Heat. It was on every night live, 2 or 3 hours, at a National Public Radio for a while, where they were broadcasting from all over the place. Live stuff about arts, news, and stuff like that. Then he went on to create Talk of the Nation. And then they sort of kept the style, the flavor, but handed it over to other folks who just, you know, turned it around. So no, it was a public it was one of the early efforts of National Public Radio to have a kind of a nationwide call-in show.
Well, I asked the question, Alan, because I try to disabuse anyone who calls into this program of thinking I'm a journalist. You know, I will gladly deliver facts and, you know, carry on and have fun and fool around, stuff like that. But yeah, but when we're dealing in facts, I try to let it be known that we're dealing in facts.
Well,
But it's also very much shaped by my opinion, and the two cannot be uncommingled.
Well, that's the point. NPR pretends that it's not. But as far as I'm concerned, Neil Cullen does that shaping, although it doesn't come across that way. It's presented as an interview show with Cullen. Not supposed to be an opinion thing, but it's, you know. But, you know, can you understand that? What, you know, can you imagine when the last time they had Noam Chomsky on? Or Howard Zinn before he passed on?
And oh, so, I'm betting.
Naomi Klein, you think they interviewed her on there? And so on and so forth. So to call it an objective news program, you just have to look at, you know, we know which people have been, I mean, we're still living the McCarthy era, the results of that. I just recently re-saw the film Good Night and Good Luck. Are you familiar with that one?
Oh, very much so. George Clooney, yeah.
Yeah, Clooney produced it. He didn't just act in it. Yeah, it's his baby. And I was always, you know, a fan of Murrow. And even better than Murrow was George Polk, who was a colleague of Murrow and was killed in Greece for reporting on stuff that people here didn't want reported on.
Well, you
brought up so much about, you know, the whole McCarthy era. We have suffered from that. Another film I recently saw was just a simple white film that many people may know about called Roman Holiday with Gregory Peck.
Oh, gosh, sure, yeah.
Which is a wonderful, marvelous little film. Did you know who wrote that?
No.
Dalton Trumbo. And they wouldn't allow his name on the film because he was blacklisted.
He had been blacklisted.
It was stuff like that, which is the reason why the film was so marvelous. It could have been just another flip piece of nothing. But because it was saying a few things, it was talking about a little bit of humanity underneath it all. But, yeah, we're... the fact that we can have these different kinds of so-called news shows that just completely eliminate part of the spectrum and throw it away as being, as you said, non-serious or wacko. I mean, Cynthia McKinney has always been an easy target for a lot of people just because she doesn't fit everybody's description of traditional folks. But, you know, just like they did to Dennis and ask him about, you know, UFOs, they always take her to task as being some sort of nutcase and talk about her hair and talk about everything else. You know, and she's the one person in Congress who confronted Donald Rumsfeld and asked him, well, what happened with our money? You familiar with that?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yep.
And so, you know, I don't care how whacked out she is. I don't care if she was on some sort of medication or the fact that she did that one courageous thing, amongst others, but did that, and was the first one to call for impeachment, by the way, even before Kucinich. But who cares this other stuff about her? She did something that defended the American people against abuses of part of the administration, the major part, the Defense Department. And she asked that incredible question to the head of the Joint Chief of Staff about, did those war games going on 9/11 in any way impair our ability to defend ourselves? Taking on a subject that had been ignored throughout all of the investigations of 9/11, and when they could have just quashed it in a moment and said, you nutcase, they said, no, it didn't. It actually enhanced. In other words, the first time any official people in our government admitted that those war games were actually taking place was in that questioning that took place in the Congress, in that hearing, or whatever it was.
And you know, what you're pointing to, Alan, is, I think, an undercurrent of real frustration with NPR. I've gotten an email in the last few minutes saying, don't you know that NPR now stands for National Pentagon Radio?
I've heard it as National Petroleum
Radio. National Petroleum Radio. Right. And you know, if you remember the Bush years, and most of us do, you know that there was a concerted effort by the loyal Bushies to infiltrate and to otherwise pollute what used to be some pretty good objective journalism.
Yeah, and on PBS as well. Yeah, absolutely. Conan antecedes all that, though. He's been doing this thing for a long time. In his own little way, quietly. He kind of represents, he's the gatekeeper.
Well, you know, from time to time people have said, you know, Bob, you ought to give public radio a call and, you know, see if maybe they'd put you on, whatever, that kind of thing. And yeah. I dismiss it out of hand because that staid and stately audience that likes to hear classical music would probably have a great big jump in aneurysm the first time I raised my voice.
That might be worth it for nothing else.
But I think I will remain where I am for the time being. Alan, it's awfully good to hear from you. I hope things are going well. I know what it is to have to deal with, you know, your own life from time to time. It has an ugly way of intruding, doesn't it?
Intruding, yeah. Well, thank you for keeping up, doing what you can with whatever you got.
Well, we're trying. We're trying.
Oh, trooper.
Alan, take care and have a great evening.
You too.
All right. Bye now. Calling from South Florida, that's Alan. And that's it for the show. Tuesday's gone, as the old song says. And we'll be back for prayer meeting tomorrow night. Hope you'll be here with us. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, all of this happen. Thanks to Sue and to Lottie. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to all of you who contribute to keep this effort underway. Don't think for a minute that we don't know that there are sacrifices involved in your doing so. We do understand that. We do know that. And it makes it all the more appreciated. Because there are people out there with money to burn wet elephants, whole herds of them. And they're perfectly happy with the media structure in this country the way it is. You're not. And because you're not, you're willing to make the sacrifices that you make to keep this effort going and hopefully growing. And for that, we are much obliged. We are also deeply indebted to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. You know the work they do. You know how hard it is. You know how threatening it can be. And therefore, you do know, in fact, why I call the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch the hardest working, bravest people I know. And of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The light's on, the stream is live, and the mic is hot, and it is Tuesday on the Horn, the second day of March. Apparently, here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, west by God, almost level West Virginia, March is entering like a lion, because we got more snow. Oh, joy. More snow. Yay. Hurrah. But you know what? We've got a great, potential for conversation this evening. And that's what matters most. So, screw the snow. Might as well try to shovel back the tides as try to keep the snow back. Although I was thinking about something the other day, and just ponder this for a moment, if you will. You know, even things such as hours paid for snowplow work, and salt for salt trucks to scatter on the roads to melt ice and snow. That's all got to be budgeted, right? Sure it does. Now, here's the question. The governor of West Virginia, Joe Manchin, is a notorious global warming denier, even though he passes himself off as a Democrat. Remember, when you're considering West Virginia politics, the only Democrat a Manchin has ever voted for has been another Manchin. The Manchin family helped us get Arch Moore, the Republican governor who just about robbed us blind and wound up in the federal penitentiary. The Manchin family formed Democrats for Moore. More recently, when a brilliant woman named Charlotte Pritt was running for governor in 1996, the Manchin family formed Democrats for Underwood so that they could get a barely still breathing Republican corpse in the governor's mansion instead of her, because she had whipped Joe in the primaries and he didn't like it very well. And Joe, of course, is in the pocket of big coal. Never met a coal polluter, producer, the scalawag, whatever, that he didn't think was especially entitled to some form of corporate welfare. Big touter of things like the carbon capture and sequestration and so forth. But in the face of all of that, he's still got to have a budget. And in many states where snow has been very prevalent this year, other governors similarly situated also have to have a budget. And so here's the question. If you're a global warming denier, and in Joe Manchin's particular case, if you're someone who denies that coal and its extraction is harming Appalachia and particularly West Virginia, how do you go about setting up a budget that takes into account apparently a shifting and radically changing climate paradigm that has closed schools in the state for weeks on end and has overtaxed our supplies of money and supplies with, materials with which to deal with things like heavy snowfall and ice storms? How do you budget for that when the very cause of it is something that you don't think exists? Do you see what kind of turbulent conflicts arise inside the minds of the deniers and the coalistas and the, that crowd? That would, if that was me.